Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, October the 25th. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today with Bill. A lot of talk about election denying, but it's coming in a different direction now. I'm glad to see that some Republicans are fighting back on the issue. I mean, we're not defending election denying, but on the other hand, there does seem to be a selective reporting of election denying, and I'm glad to see that some Republicans are fighting back. There's a new prime minister in the UK, so lots to get into. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. We're living in interesting times, Bill, because I think this is the first time in history that you've had three prime ministers in like 2 months and a prime minister actually serving two monarchs. I mean, it's a lot of history we're in the middle of, Bill.
Very much so, and it's important to us in the United States because, to me, the most important thing for the new Prime Minister of Britain to do is to win the next election. What you've seen in the last months is strife within the Conservative Party, and Rishi Sunak emerged from that strife after the resignations of two prime ministers, and that was Liz Truss and, of course, Boris Johnson, and he emerged as the new prime minister. He is the first person of color to be prime minister of Great Britain. He is extraordinarily brilliant and capable and very rich, and he is very pro-American, which is, to me, the acid test of a new prime minister. I want to know what his attitude toward the United States is. He owns a home in Santa Monica, California, which is good. But he has got to get the Conservative Party organized in such a way that they can win the next election because the Labour Party in Great Britain cannot be trusted. I mean, it is very much infiltrated with very hard leftists. The new leader of the Labour Party has done a pretty good job of trying to keep that element under control, but we found from the Democratic Party here that they can never be controlled. They really believe that they have found the way to universal happiness. So we're going to be watching the new prime minister, Mr. Sunak, very carefully. We're going to be watching what he does internationally. We're going to be watching what he does domestically and hope for his success, because his success will be good for the United States. His failure
will be bad
for the United States.
Yes, it is the strongest ally, no question about it. And, you know, when people talk about NATO, it's the U.S., the U.K., and everybody else.
So, well, that's right, yeah.
You know, so we need a strong U.K. because there are a lot of members of NATO, but not too many who can do what the U.K. can do, as we saw in Afghanistan and Iraq and some other places. I find it fascinating, though, the take that many people are doing, or what they're reporting, I should say, on why this lady, Prime Minister, was driven out of office. They're saying that she was driven out of office because she was trying to come up with a radical economic plan. I didn't think it was that radical, but I am surprised she didn't fight for it first. She didn't fight. She just started changing everything, and when you do that, you're going to lose, Bill.
That's right. And she gave up the fight very quickly. Now, in fairness, it was pointed out that when she was chosen as prime minister, there were many people who predicted she wouldn't last long, that the job was too great right now, the complications in the economy too overwhelming, and that she might just be basically a placeholder. Well, she held the place, but how long was it? About 2 months or so, and she was out.
I think it's 45 days. I heard the record
yes.
that she was the shortest prime minister in history, 45
yeah.
days. I mean, my goodness, even a pop song stays around longer than that, Bill.
That's right. That's right. And an old bag of popcorn stays around a lot longer than that. But we'll see. It's very exciting because he's a very interesting man. We'll have to see what direction they go in. The first international problem, of course, they have on that side of the pond, as they call it, is Ukraine. The war continues. There are people in various Western capitals who believe we must give them all support until they win the war against Russia. There are other people, including many in the Republican Party here, to my distress, who think, well, we ought to just pull the plug and let them fight it out among themselves. The reason we are giving aid to Ukraine, and it really has to be explained, it has not been explained by the press, which explains nothing these days, is that we have learned our lesson from history that aggression that is not punished is going to grow. Putin is basically an imperialist. He believes in Imperial Russia. He believes in the Soviet Union that used to exist with all the satellites around it. A man like that, who already has now invaded a major country, cannot be trusted not to do it again. I mean, what is he going to say? I won't do it again. I'll be a good boy. No, he has his eyes on other countries.
Sure.
And that is why we are giving the aid to nip the aggression in the bud. And we learned that painful lesson in the 1930s. At the same time, if we can get a settlement that is favorable to Ukraine and gets the Russian troops out, that would be good. I'm not so sure that settlement is available. One of the interesting things, by the way, is that there is evidence, substantial evidence, that the Iranians are supplying the Russians not only with missiles, but with instructors on how to use them. Now, if this is true, and it appears to be true, I think our own White House confirmed that it was true, that's a pretty serious escalation, and it should guide us in our policy toward Iran. But I notice it's not being emphasized very much. In fact, the entire Iranian insurrection is being minimized in the American press, even though it is led by women, and women's rights play a vital role. You will notice the fact that the women's organizations here have no interest in it.
It does appear that the news media is very interested in reproductive rights, but not Iranian women's rights. You know, it's interesting.
Right.
It's
the farce of what our politics has become.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I think what the ladies in Iran should do is to say that they're marching for abortion as well.
Yes.
And maybe if they did that, then maybe they would get publicity. But let me say something that I've heard from some fellow conservatives and some other people, that what scares them in Ukraine is not that they don't want to support Ukraine. What scares them in Ukraine is that they don't want to back into a war because of the weakness of the Biden administration, that they're sitting there saying, you know, we're taking these little steps and those little steps, and we could be backing into a war, like we've got the airborne, the 102nd Airborne, apparently working out.
101st.
Yes, they're doing operations near Ukraine. Well, a lot of people are worried about that. They're saying, wait a minute, does that mean they're going to go in? So I don't know. I agree with you on Ukraine. I think, you know, that I like to see Putin lose in Ukraine. I just don't want to see America drawn into a war that the public is not going to support. And that's the key. The public is not going to support troops in Ukraine, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think that also you would believe by now that we have spent some $50 billion in Ukraine, and I think well spent. I was for it and am for it. You'd think the president would address the nation, you know, from the Oval Office and say, this is why we are there. This is what we must do. This is our policy. There's not any communication with the American people. It's remarkable.
Well, that is correct, and I think that's why a lot of people are worried, because they feel like, right or wrong, fair or unfair, they feel that these guys don't know what they're doing and that they could be backing or, you know, somehow sending the wrong signals, and here we are in a shooting war in Ukraine, and that's not going to be supported by the American people, that much I can tell you. But yes, that's the problem. I'm not exactly sure what the Prime Minister of the UK can do about this, Bill. Maybe he can support the U.S., but there's a lot of confusion among the European countries, because they seem to be a lot more concerned about heating their apartments and heating their homes this winter, Bill.
Well, they have got to make up for their own mistakes, especially Germany, which seems to be mistake prone throughout history. They made a big investment in energy supplies from Russia, which have now been, I think largely cut off and are largely being boycotted. They may have a fuel shortage. Now, the one country that can supply that fuel very easily is the United States, but won't do it because of the foolish ignorance of this administration to satisfy a bunch of environmental crazies. The president of the United States cut off our energy production. I mean, this is one of the biggest mistakes I've ever seen in American policy, foreign or domestic. They will not correct it, and the fact that they will not correct it indicates who's really running the Democratic Party.
That's right.
And at the same time, they are still negotiating with Iran, a country that is going to build nuclear weapons, whether they agree to it or not, is going to build intercontinental missiles, is supplying Russia with help, and is threatening to exterminate Israel. And we're still negotiating with them as if the negotiations can actually go anywhere. I don't know what the origin of that is, but I do know this. The foreign policy of this administration sounds a lot like the foreign policy of Barack Obama. And
right.
I just wonder whether he is the one pulling the strings.
Yeah, you get the feeling that much of what this administration does is they're trying to somehow salvage the Barack Obama foreign policy, whether it's the Paris Climate Change Accords, which is absolutely worthless at this moment. I mean, nobody even talks about that. I think if you brought that up right now, most people would laugh at you, Paris Climate Change, the Iran nuclear deal. So much, it just seems to me, nothing more. They really want to make sure that it gets reinstated at any cost, Bill. I think that's my impression. Let's talk a little bit about some other issues of the week, Bill, that I wanted to chat with you about. I mentioned at the introduction that Republicans are, and I'm very happy to see this, are finally fighting back on this election denying garbage. Because all we hear is about election denying from our side, but we never hear it from the other side. When the other side was denying Trump's election, Bush's election, I read the other day that something like 40 Democrats did not go to President Trump's inauguration because they said he was not legitimate. You remember what happened to Bush. They didn't want to do his electoral college because they didn't think he was legitimate and so on. But I'm happy to see that Republicans are fighting back, and one of the best ones was our Senator Cruz, who went on The View and just gave it right back.
Oh,
to
boy.
He was great,
yes,
I thought,
yes.
Bill.
Well, he is great. Ted Cruz is one of he may not be the most engaging personality, but he is one of the most brilliant men in the Senate. You know, Alan Dershowitz was one of his teachers at the Harvard Law School. He does not agree with Cruz. Alan Dershowitz, despite all the propaganda, is a liberal, but he said he was one of the most brilliant students he ever had. Cruz gets it right. He knows where the truth lies. He's willing to look for the truth, and he's willing to state it. Now, I'm sure you saw also that when he was on The View, he was interrupted by a gang of ne'er-do-wells in the audience. Even Whoopi Goldberg had to plead with them to stop their shouting so that they could do their jobs. Now, maybe the ladies of The View got a little lesson from this, and that's what the Republicans face all the time. The shout down, the on college campuses, the refusal to hear, the refusal to respect, and I thought the incident was very, very instructive. But
yes,
we are.
But I was going to say, Bill.
Go ahead.
I was going to say very quickly, Bill, that Senator Cruz and his wife one time went out to dinner in Washington D.C. and they had to leave.
That's right.
The restaurant because of clowns like this, Bill.
Yes, that's right. And I don't know why they had to leave. I understand that there are anti-harassment laws in Washington, but, of course, they're only enforced if Democrats are harassed. So, we really do have right now, in many respects, on the federal level at least, a two-tiered justice system, one for Democrats and one for Republicans. I mean, many of the things being investigated by the so-called investigators are apparently things that occurred over the years instigated by Hillary Clinton, but she gets off scot-free. She now has made a claim today, you probably saw, that Republican operatives are plotting to steal the 2024 presidential election. I wonder how she would know that. I mean, she doesn't travel very much. She sits at home and ponders the fact that her election was stolen in 2016
right.
by a thief, a real estate agent from New York, a thief. And yet she's telling us this. It's quite remarkable. We have an election in 2 weeks.
Yes.
2 weeks is a lifetime in politics, and anything can happen. I think when you get within 1 week, it's things get a little sure. But I'm very, very distressed at the lack of sophistication in some of the reporting and in some of the poll counting that's going on right now. First of all, I wish somebody would point out, and I think you'll agree with this, there are two words missing from this entire campaign, and those words are foreign policy. Do you know there hasn't been one discussion of foreign policy during this campaign, and we are facing foreign policy challenges really of a monumental nature all over the world? Not one discussion. The press just sits back and does its little thing, whatever, and it is little these days.
Mm-hmm.
Second is the interpretation of polls. I mean, I would love to see a red wave in 2 weeks. I really would. But I do think we have to be awfully careful about some of the language being used. They will point out, Mr. Jones, the Republican, was behind by 20 points last month. He is now behind by only 7 points this month. Well, that may be true, and it may be wonderful news on our side, but this is not the Olympics. There's no silver medal. You have to not only gain on the opposition, you have to defeat the opposition. And I do have this lurking fear that we may see a lot of races where the Republicans come up just short. And I hope that doesn't happen. I hope they go over the top. But the pollsters have to emphasize this is – in politics, you either win or you lose. There is nothing else. And the when I see talk of a Republican wave and a Republican surge, what I want to know is, did they surge to the leadership position or just short of the leadership position?
Right.
Because the second doesn't count. Nobody remembers how far behind the second guy was.
That's exactly right. All they remember is who won, who lost, and
that's right.
The one who lost will often disappear. Look at Mitt Romney. I mean, Romney has disappeared completely from a lot of conversation. But it does seem to me interesting to me the one race, Bill, that I am starting to follow quite closely, because I think it could be. I mentioned this last week, and I'll say it again. It could be the first sign of a tsunami. And that is New York for governor race.
Yes.
That as of today, as of this morning, is 6 points difference in the average between the two. And that's really close, actually. And then if you look at Trafalgar, maybe Trafalgar is the eternal optimist. I don't know. Or maybe they're right. I don't know. We'll find out. But it's only 2 points in that race.
Yes.
I don't know if Trafalgar is just a GOP cover. I have no idea. I don't know. But they are making a lot of elections very close. But they've been right in the past, Bill.
They have. They've also been wrong in some cases. This is Trafalgar's election to win or lose. If Trafalgar comes in very close to accurate, they will be probably the premier pollster in the United States. But if they're very wrong on a lot of these races, and by enough, they will kind of go the way of some of the other pollsters that that were constantly wrong.
Right.
I think the six points that you're talking about was a Fox poll. And
what I meant was the average. The average, when you take the RCP, what they call the RCP average, where they average all the polls, it's the average is 6 points different. It's 49-43. When you do the average of all the polls, that's what I meant, the RCP average. There may be a Fox poll. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, well, the average, one thing you always have to ask when looking at the average is when the earliest polls in that average were taken. Because
right,
if they were taken more than a week ago, they're obsolete polls.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here again, you have to interpret it. I think that in looking at the state races, there are some that do seem to be as close to in the bag as possible. I mean, I do think we can say that in Texas, Abbott will probably win. I can't see much of a turnaround there. I think Michigan has become very exciting because it really is a tie now, and that really was unexpected that the Republican
mm-hmm.
candidate Dixon would come up to a tie. But again, it depends on who votes. It really
right.
depends on who votes. Now, it does appear, if you look at the Real Clear Politics averages, they are predicting that both the House and the Senate will go Republican. I certainly hope so.
Yes.
And they're predicting...
No, I think so.
Yeah, go ahead.
They're predicting by big numbers in the House, like 30 votes in the House or 30 seats in the House. And in the Senate, well, that's a little different, as you know, but you pointed out today in Urgent Agenda or yesterday that it's 3 points or 3 seats. Basically, Georgia, Nevada, and
Arizona.
Those
yeah.
three. Which, honestly, those three make a lot of sense, Bill, because they were historically red states. And then somewhere during the Obama years, he was able to put together the Hispanic coalition. And that's
yes.
what elected a Democrat in Nevada and Arizona. But I think maybe those states are beginning to come back a little bit, Bill. I certainly hope so, because I don't see how, for example, Nevada can be represented by this lady senator who seems so out of touch. Nobody knows who
yes.
she is. I think Laxalt would be a much better choice. He's just listening to Laxalt. You get the feeling he understands the issues. You listen to the lady senator. I can't think of her name. Maybe that's why I can't think of her name, because she's never anywhere.
Yeah.
And you listen to
yeah.
her, and she sounds like just somebody who was selected by the party to be the person in charge, Bill.
That's true. She is the incumbent senator. She is very, very much unknown. She is, I think, the first Hispanic senator from the state of Nevada, which has a woman who has a state that has a large Hispanic population. But as you've pointed out, and other analysts have pointed out, the Hispanic vote is moving rightward. It's not moving
mm-hmm.
leftward. And I think that Laxalt, who comes from a very famous Nevada political family,
yes, absolutely,
is in a position to win. Arizona Senate race very tight. The Democratic incumbent Senator Kelly is the
yeah.
husband of Gabriel Giffords. And that is, he gets a very large sympathy vote for that. You know, Giffords is highly respected. She was the one who was shot and had to retire.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a particularly animated guy. I mean, I don't know really what he even sounds like. The Republican candidate, is it Masters? I've forgotten. You have to remember
Masters,
so many names
yeah.
here.
Masters. Yeah, Masters.
He began very badly. Many people in the professional world of politics in Washington thought he was a terrible choice as a candidate because he had made a number of controversial statements during his lifetime, and they went back, I think, even to elementary school. I mean, may have said something to a third grade teacher, and he did not seem to be a winning candidate. But he has fought a very good race, and he is now challenging Kelly for that seat. I'm not prepared to go as far as to say that he'll win it. I think he's got a chance. I think Real Clear Politics in this case may have overstated it a bit. I hope they didn't. I hope they get it right. Now, going over to Georgia, I have never seen a race for the United States Senate between two more rotten candidates than I mean, here are two men you would think would know how to conduct themselves. For goodness sake, I mean, the Democratic incumbent, Warnock, is an absolute phony. He's one of these phony ministers. Everything
right.
about him is phony. I mean, he apparently owns real estate, and he's one of the cruelest landlords, has a terrible history. He has said over the years things. He says, well, as a minister, you know, sometimes I go a little overboard, but he's a real hard leftist. He's a bad guy. Now, Herschel, I like Herschel Walker. He's a good guy. He's a man who I think has learned a lot in life, but he's lived, I think, a life that's a little too full. And he's had to explain away a lot of things in his background that should have been vetted right from the start, because he loses points every time one of these scandals comes up or one of these things in his background. But if I were in Georgia, I would absolutely vote for Herschel Walker, because he stands for the right things. If you're going to have two guys who are defective, at least have the one who's the least defective, defective. And
right.
I think he's got a good chance of winning.
I think so. Now, I have to be upfront and say that I like Herschel Walker a lot, too. And my I'll be partisan. He played for the Dallas Cowboys, and he was a really good running back. So, you know, I think we're fond of Herschel Walker here. And I think he's also a longtime friend of Donald Trump, as I understand, going back to the days when Donald Trump had a team in that USFL football league. And Herschel Walker was the first player that he drafted or something. But you're right. I mean, you would think that Georgia could do better. But what I find amusing, it makes me angry and I laugh. I guess it depends on my mood that day. But you have these Democrats who vote 99% of the time for Joe Biden. There's not a single program that these guys have voted against, all the major ones, that is, that they have voted against the president. Like Kelly in Arizona was saying that maybe we're spending too much money. Well, okay, why didn't you think about that when you voted? You could have stopped the bill that made all this inflation possible, but he didn't. He's talking about the border. Maybe we should do more. Well, you could have done more. You could have done something before. So you get the feeling that these people are phony, because on one hand, they're saying they're very independent, but on the other hand, they're completely dependent. You know, we have this phenomenon going on here in Texas with Beto O'Rourke, who doesn't even he wouldn't even you know, if Joe Biden came out of an airplane, Beto would say, "Who's that? I don't know him."
Yeah,
and yet he's got
all
these pictures of him and his support for Joe Biden. So I think the many voters, Bill, react to this in a way, and they go, "My gosh, this guy is. He's full of it. Of course he's supporting Joe Biden. Why not just say, yes, I did. I voted for this, and I was wrong." So why not try that, Bill?
Well, of course. But, the conventional wisdom, and I think in this case the conventional wisdom is right, that the Democratic Party has lost touch with the country, that it really does not understand what people are concerned about, what people are passionate about. It really doesn't care much about the country. That it used to be a party, and it was a party I was in. I worked for a Democratic senator, a liberal Democratic senator in my youth, and a very great one, a very fine man. But they were national defense Democrats. They understood history. They understood what we had experienced in the 20th century, both domestically and in our foreign affairs. You don't find that anymore. You find basically narrow-minded ideological fanatics who think that abortion is the biggest right anybody ever had in this world, and that means abortion right up to the moment of birth. That's something many Americans don't realize, that some of these pro-abortion candidates mean abortion until birth, and they don't state it that way, but if you look at what they actually stand for, that's pretty frightening. And by the way, that is the law in New York State. It's horrible to me. I mean, it's just – to me, that's infanticide. That's not abortion any longer. And but then the party once thought abortion was going to be their big issue because of the Dodd decision by the United States Supreme Court, which vacated Roe v. Wade. Well, it turned out it was for about 2 weeks. But the American people, including American women, understand that the biggest issues deal with their ability to survive economically, their ability to put food on the table, and the second, the sleeper issue, which I think is going to emerge as possibly the biggest issue in America in the next few years, is parents' rights.
Yes.
And the responsibility of parents and what the schools are doing. This is the issue that flipped Virginia and made
right.
Glenn Youngkin into the governor of Virginia. It is an issue that should have been hit harder by the Republicans. They are hitting it, not as hard as I think they should. There was this program a few days ago you may have seen on CBS.
Yes, on CBS. Let me take a break, Bill. Let me take a break because
okay.
I want to talk about the face. I really want to talk about Face the Nation and what you're about to talk about. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do once a week. We're chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, you started talking about Face the Nation. I got to do a little introduction to it before you explain it. On Sunday morning, I was flipping channels looking for the Cowboys pregame show because normally the Cowboys game is on Fox, but on Sunday it was on CBS. And it starts at noon local time, so I'm flipping channels to see if I can catch the pregame show or as much of it as I can before I had to go to church. And then I came across Face the Nation, a program that I don't watch that much anymore. And then they had this interview, and I was like, I couldn't walk away from the TV, Bill. It was just fascinating to watch these voters. It was like these voters, they completely – I mean, the people at CBS must have been looking at each other saying, what did we do, Bill?
Well, that's it. When it came to certain issues, all three of the people on the panel, I think the total was three, agreed. And it was startling because what were the issues that they agreed on? Parents and children. Parents and children, parents and children. What should be taught in schools? What should not be taught in schools? And it was startling because they all were very close to each other, that certain things are not appropriate for certain age groups, that the schools belong to the people, that parents have certain rights. And yes, and more power to the interviewer for bringing out what they actually felt. But it was startling, and maybe the Democratic Party got out of that a lesson. That the
right.
Democratic Party has lost touch with people and has lost touch with American families.
Absolutely. And if you remember, they were also down on woke.
Yes.
When the question of
yes.
woke came up, they were thumbs down. But I thought it was fascinating because you had a white Republican from Texas, a black Democrat, I think she was from Arkansas or somewhere else, and then the other person, the other lady, I don't know where she was from, but I think they picked these people maybe thinking that they were going to see how polarized the country is. And in some ways it is. But when it comes to children, it's not. And I think that speaks volumes because I agree with you. I think the parents – there's two stories, and I'm going to go on record now. I'm going to make a prediction. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I'll make a prediction. There's two big political currents that we're going to see on Election Day, two big ones. Number one is going to be parents voting – in huge numbers for the Republicans, but really against the teachers union. It's
yes,
not
mm-hmm.
so much that they love the Republicans, but they hate the teachers union. And unfortunately for the Democrats, they're in bed with the teachers union. They're going to be punished for that.
They are.
And the second story is the Hispanic vote. I think the Hispanic vote is going to shift to the Republicans for reasons very similar to the parents' values. Abortion is not playing well in South Texas. It's just simply, people are, for example, the energy, the position of the Biden administration on energy is killing the Democrats in South Texas because of all the refineries and all the Hispanics who work at those refineries and the truck drivers. And, people are saying, wait a minute, why are you going after my job? I work in the energy industry. There's nothing wrong with
that's
that.
That's right.
Don't make me feel like, I'm an evil person because I work in energy, Bill.
Well, that's the point. I mean, you have a man running for the Senate who may be elected from Pennsylvania, and he is an absolute left-wing Democrat, as well as being a man who's tragically and sadly impaired, and we're not saying that in any gloating way, and he is against the very things that would make this country energy independent again, and Pennsylvania would play a very big role in that. But he is, in many respects, kind of a fanatic. He also has said that his greatest wish, if he could have one wish in the world, would be to release murderers from life sentences. That is not a winning issue. It really is not. I mean, the Democratic Party has they've gone after crime victims. They have gone after parents and mothers. In Virginia, they ran against mothers. I'm just waiting for the Democratic Party to take a firm stand against Cocker Spaniels.
That's right. Well, I was thinking maybe they'll go after grandmothers next.
Yes.
They're going after the mothers, and I guess the grandmothers are left. But you do have to wonder about, you know, I'm laughing, but you have to wonder about how, you know, what do these people say to each other when they're having coffee, you know, when they're having strategy meetings? Because, like, you know, if you're a Democrat and the only thing that matters to you is abortion, or the only thing that, you know, reproductive rights is all that matters to you, and you think that oil is evil, that somehow all these people working in the oil industry are evil people, they're contributing to the end of the world, how can these people look at each other and say these things, and nobody in the room raises their hand and say, well, I think we're going too far, guys. I think we're going too far in what we're doing. So it's a party dominated by extremes. That's all I can say. They're just dominated by a bunch of people who agree with each other but have no idea of what's going on outside of the room, Bill.
You're absolutely correct. And from what I understand it, I have very good sources on these things, that in Washington, Democratic Party breakfasts, when they have breakfast, are very short. The Democratic Party breakfast is very short because they're afraid if they don't finish breakfast fast enough, the world will come to an end before they finish breakfast because of global warming. So they eat fast. They eat fast. They want to get their breakfast down before the world comes to an end. And they believe
right.
that. I mean, the one from New York, AOC, Little Evita from the Bronx, who has been out there. And I mean, she actually said, if we don't solve this within 14 years, the earth will be finished. No, it won't be. You know, no, it won't be. And people are onto this. They're onto this fear politics. The earth will come to an end. We will lose all our rights. If you criticize the press, it's an assault on democracy. No, it's an assault on democracy when the press doesn't do its job well. That's
right,
an assault
exactly.
on democracy. And,
yeah.
You know, I think the Democratic message really went down the drain. Now, in the last 2 weeks of the campaign, they are trying to resurrect concern for the economy. But what can they say? I mean, they go out there and they say the economy is really great. You just don't realize it yet, you peasants.
Right.
Don't you realize what we've done for you?
Right, right. It's hilarious because one of the things that I wanted to talk about today was the new message at the White House is that if the Republicans take over, you're going to have inflation and doom and gloom. You know, the economy is going to be worse. There's going to be inflation. And a lot of Americans must be looking at this and saying, wait a minute, I have inflation now. Okay, I go to the store and they're sitting there saying, what did I miss? What part of the story did I miss? Because I have inflation now. Another thing, too, Bill, that does not click with people, I've heard this from people, is why are we tapping into our national security reserves to keep gasoline prices down? Why aren't we drilling for energy so that we don't have to mess with our reserves? I think a lot of people, myself, I'll speak for myself, it worries me if we ever were to get into an emergency that we may not have enough reserves in the tank or whatever they call that, where they call it, the inventory or whatever they hold.
That's right.
It also worries me, Bill, that diesel supplies are very low. Last time I checked, that's how you move trucks with diesel.
That's right.
So how did we get into this mess? You know, a lot of people I talk to, they say, how did we get into this mess? You know, who voted for this? That's another question that I hear a lot. Who voted for this? Who voted for this that, that we were going to be like this? Who voted for this? The reality is nobody did because during the campaign, Biden didn't say much, Bill.
Well, yes, and it was done by executive order. The president can tap into the reserves. He did it obviously for political reasons. By flooding the market with oil from our strategic reserve, he believes he could drive the price of oil, of gasoline at the pump down, and he did. I mean, it did go down for a while based on that, but it has put us in a very serious situation. You know, I think back to the one of the great Japanese blunders of World War II is that when they attacked Pearl Harbor, they didn't hit the oil tanks. And many American strategists after the attack were very surprised. Those oil tanks held the strategic reserve of fuel for the Pacific Fleet. Had they been destroyed, we would have been in an even worse situation. And here, I don't know what we do. If we are get into a situation where we need the military very quickly, we don't have those reserves. Well, or at least we have far fewer reserves than we had before. And we would have to find some way of starting to produce energy again. That's been shut down. So it was very irresponsible. It was done entirely for political reasons. And it is an argument that could be used against the Democrats and their irresponsibility when it comes to national defense. Absolutely. The argument's just, you know, this the world is coming to an end stuff. After a while, it wears off, especially when the world doesn't come to an end. If it came to an end, we'd say the Democrats were right, but it wouldn't matter, you know. But
that's right.
And then another thing is they, you know, if the Republicans get into office, they're going to drive inflation up. How much more up is there? I mean, it's going
right
through the roof already.
Right, and it's hurting people much, Bill. It's really hurting people. I mean, Just on a personal level, you know, we went out to lunch on Sunday, and what normally used to be like $27, $28 is now close to $40. And when I got the bill, I said to my wife, can you double check to make sure that, you know, they didn't make a mistake? Because she's usually better than I am with numbers, you know. So she looked at it one by one, and she said, no, it's what we ate. And it's like,
yes,
this is happening. I hear this all the time. Every time my wife goes shopping, she comes home, and she takes the bill from the grocery store, and she goes, see this right here? It used to be this a year ago. Right here. And I bet you those conversations, Bill, are happening in just about every home in the country. When the wife, I'm going to say the wife, I know some people are going to think that that's, you know, sexist, but at least that's the way it is here. My wife is the one who does the shopping. But I bet that happens in a lot of homes where the wife is shopping and she comes home and she's telling the husband, look at this. And that's why the topic of inflation, Bill, is such a difficult topic for people to forget about, because it's impacting your life every single day. I'll give you another example very quickly. Halloween. We got a Halloween coming up. We now have, as you know, a couple of little ones who are dressing up for Halloween, grandsons, that is. You know, they're getting ready for it. And so, you know, we were looking at chocolate, and we were sitting
Noah,
there saying, oh, my
Lincoln,
gosh.
Noah, Lincoln, and Sophia.
Well, so,
Noah,
that's
Lincoln,
right, the three.
Sophia.
Yeah, except Sophia is a little too, she's 3 months, so I don't think, yeah, she's probably a little too young, but Lincoln and Noah, definitely not. And they've got their uniforms and all that ready to go. They're going to be the Incredibles, you know, these cartoons. They look great. My wife was fixing the length of the cartoon of the wardrobe. But, you know, you look at these prices and you go, my goodness. Now, I have to be also honest. I mean, we're okay. I mean, you know, we're okay. We're not, you know, we can make it. But I look at other people who are not okay, who are in, you know, in different situation, and I think about them and I say, how are they making it? Well, I know how they're making it. They're cutting back, or they're not doing this, or they're not doing that. And that's a hard thing. You know, you work all your life, or you
that's
work
right
hard, and then all of a sudden prices go up, and it's the most painful of all the economic attacks, Bill, because it's
yes
like you can't do anything about
tax
it.
It is a tax. And people on fixed incomes, people on Social Security, also people who are sending their children to college. And suddenly, the thing they could afford the night before they can't afford any more. I think there are probably many families in this country today that are having to tell their children to skip college for a year. Because not everybody...
I wouldn't
everybody
be surprised.
Not everybody in every school gets a scholarship. That doesn't happen in the Ivy League because they're so rich they can give scholarships to everybody. But people going to smaller colleges, I think it's a very, very different story. Very bad situation, and inflation is a tax. I don't know when that tax will go away. I think that some of these prices may remain high. And, yes, I have no doubt that there's some gouging going on. There always is. But the real cause of this inflation is the fact that the government spent so much money and flooded the economy with so much money, calling it COVID relief. Much of the COVID relief wasn't even necessary, and much of it was used for other purposes.
Right. Well, I hear that a lot of Blue City mayors were able to pay off some of their budget items with COVID money, that it wasn't always COVID related. But look, this is a difficult topic for me, this COVID thing, because I supported President Trump when we did that $600 for everybody back 2 years ago, and I thought the PPP program was a good idea because it kept people on the payroll, which was important.
Yes.
But I think by the end of 2020, we had, things were starting to get better, and that's where I believe the Democrats made the mistake because they decided to add more money. We really didn't need the $1,400 or whatever we got in 2021, we probably could have done without that. We could have done without the Inflation Reduction Act, which, by the way, has a crazy name, doesn't it? And so we could have done with, but here's what amazes me, Bill. People are making the connection. They know who the culprit is, and they point right at the Oval Office, Bill.
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. And now he may be the culprit, or he may be the tool of the culprits. I have uneasy feelings about people who are pulling the strings in this administration and who are really doing some of these things. I don't have the proof, and I would never make the charge formally unless I had the proof. But some of these policies are so crazy, you wonder who really is in charge, who invented them, who demanded them. I'd like to see more press reporting on it, but we're not going to have it. And by the way, another thing that I think is really roiling people, although it may be in the background right now, is this necessity that the government is creating to buy an electric car. I don't think most Americans had in their financial planning spending $40,000 or $50,000 for an electric car. And all of a sudden they're being told, well, in a certain number of years you're going to have to do it because this is what we believe. And I think it does frighten them. That's a big investment, and that technology is not proved. We saw during Hurricane Ian recently that many people with electric cars went to them, and they found the cars were burning because the batteries had exploded. The batteries in those cars are fragile. Now, they will tell you that they're lithium batteries. They will tell you that that problem will be solved. Well, solve it first before you tell me I have to buy the car.
That's right.
And by the way,
I heard about that, Bill, when I heard about those cars going on fire, my initial thought was, is the insurance going to cover that? Because, I don't know. I mean, maybe it does. I don't know. I mean, I'll have to ask my insurance agent. But electric cars run differently than gas-powered cars, obviously. And you have to wonder, how quickly before the insurance companies say, no, we're not going to insure electric cars because they burn up. So you wonder about things like that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm not speaking correctly. But if a car burns up because there's a lot of water, well, I can tell you, we get a lot of water in Texas. Yesterday, we had a rainstorm that was pretty nasty here, and there was a lot of water in the streets. I wonder if any of the Teslas had any problem. I don't know. Or the electric cars. I don't know. You never know.
I don't know. But it's, I'd like to know who's making money on this. I really would. There's always money behind these things. And I would imagine that there is going to be a fortune made on alternative energy sources that turn out not to be so alternative. I want some evidence that some of this green energy stuff, we already know that these wind farms are a farce. They do not produce enough electricity to make that much of a difference. They also have big problems with noise pollution, other things, solar power, again, a good idea. We should have solar power where it actually works. But
right.
it's not enough. This is a country that uses a tremendous amount of energy, and for good reasons. And I am not in the mood to take out of my family planning the kind of budgetary requirement for an electric car. I really am not.
Well, I just heard, Bill, that in New England that they're already rationing gas or something for heating. Did you hear that? That in New England, in that
yes.
part of the country,
yes.
that they're rationing because
they
fear
Europe.
Some...
They
yeah, some supplies... as well. So I don't know. We'll have to see one day at a time, as they say. But this administration, they really deserve a huge – it's not so much because of the Republicans, but it's what this administration has done. They really need to be rejected on Election Day. They need a massive rejection.
Oh, absolutely.
They've
absolutely.
Done a very bad job. They've done a very bad job altogether. I just noticed very quickly, Bill, that there was a new study that came out from Gallup about the media that showing, again, more and more people doubting the media and not having or not thinking that the media is being very honest with them. And the folks over at Powerline have this article today. We may want to talk about this next week with more time, but, you know, the article starts out by saying if the mainstream media had any self-awareness or integrity, they would look at this article and maybe – have an internal house meeting and say, hey, guys, we're not doing it out there. People don't believe what we're saying. Maybe we need to change it.
Yes. Well, so I wish that would happen, but I've been in the media, as you know, and they are the most egotistical people. They really
right.
believe they are the observers, that they have been chosen by some power to keep the country on course. They were not chosen by anybody. When the First Amendment was written, this is important, when the First Amendment of the Constitution was written, it was before the age of electricity. And the words of the press meant something entirely different than what those words mean today. It was usually one man with a printing press and maybe a teenage son helping him as an apprentice,
right.
putting out a small newspaper. That's what the press meant. The founders of this country could never have anticipated the power of the media and the wealth of the media. And that's what we're up against. I'm not so sure that many of these press organizations can be saved. I think they may be so far gone with bad practices that we may need new organizations, and that's fine. I mean, let's get the money together. Let's try to make some investments in new news organizations that will be run according to traditional practices, you know, the reporting without fear or favor. And I think
yeah.
they would do well in today's situation. But you're right. The press is a big problem in this country right now. And it's a problem because they are standing in the way of the truth. They're not telling us the truth.
That's right. And very often I think they're ginning up. And this is what I hear more and more from people. They're ginning up divisions. I mean, it seems like they're more interested in having people shout at each other than people having conversations, which is why I think this thing that we talked about with Face the Nation, it backfired on them. Because I think what they were hoping to do was to show a lot of disagreements, but they found out that people are not really as disagreeable as they think they are. But the media needs a big adjustment, and I just hope that they I hope the marketplace gives it to them. The marketplace has a good way of correcting those things, Bill. When you run out of viewers or you run out of readers, that's usually the marketplace telling you you're not doing a good job. But, Bill, as always,
right.
thank you so much for your time. And you have a great week. I'm already looking forward to our next one because there's so much to talk about. And keep an eye on New York. We love what you write about New York. It's really interesting.
Thank you. Thank you. I look forward to our next program, Silvio. That will be 1 week from the election.
That you got it. All right. Thank you so much, Bill. Have a great week.
Same to you, Silvio.
All right. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're getting very close to the election. Bill is right. The next show we do will be right before the election. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.